Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's topic, forgive first mistakes when interviewing. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. What should I do when a candidate makes a mistake in an interview? Is only one mistake enough to say no to a candidate? What if they make another mistake? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Folks, don't forget we host over 100 effective manager, effective communications, and effective interviewer conferences, not just in the States, but all over the world. We're in London in late August of 2016. We're in Vancouver, British Columbia in late August. We're in Toronto in September. We're in Sydney in early October. We're in Shanghai in the middle of October, and many other of the major cities in the United States. Come see us at one of our conferences. You can learn more at manager-tools.com.
I think we've said several times, right? The purpose of an interview is to find reasons to say no, right?
Yeah, it literally is. That drives so many other good behaviors, and the absence of trying to find reasons to say no ends up driving the worst behavior.
That's true, but even though great interviewees do that, they look for reasons to say no. That doesn't mean they're not willing to forgive mistakes in an interview, right?
Exactly, because we're not perfect, right? If a candidate makes a mistake, it can be completely okay. And look, if that happens, the right thing to do is to forgive them verbally, to say, hey, no worries, for all kinds of reasons. So three simple pieces of guidance here. Not all mistakes that candidates make are fatal. You know, if they tell a lie, that's more than, we would classify that as more than a mistake, obviously. When a candidate does make a mistake, forgive them, say so. On the other hand, if they make a second error and it's similar to the first, if there a pattern begins to form, then you can rule somebody out for a pattern of mistakes. Pretty simple, really. So just because we're looking for reasons to say no doesn't mean we're seeking perfection. And I think, Mike, what's happened is when we laid out our guidance about the purpose of an interview is to find reasons to say no, and therefore to simplify that to say no, I think people said, well, they raised their eyebrows the wrong way. I'm going to say no to that. It was people misunderstood that our guidance was in response to the vast majority of people who allow confirmation bias, which flows from I need somebody, to look for reasons to like people. And of course, everybody, I mean, there are rare exceptions, but almost everybody has reasons that a hiring manager would like them. But that's not the reason to hire them. The reason to hire them is because they have both that and the things that will cause you to hate them, if you'll pardon the expression, when they get hired. And too many managers hire based on a couple of things that they like, and then realize they've hired a package of things, good and bad, and those bad things end up becoming far worse, or even just equal to the better, the stuff we want, and we never saw it, because we were never looking, because we were looking for positives. And if you start looking for positives, you find it. Now look, if you're looking for negatives, but you don't find any, that's a pretty big sign that perhaps you've got somebody good. And you will be able to hear people's positives. You will be able to feel them, see them, hear them, even if you're looking for negatives. Those will pile up naturally because in most cases, for most of the positions we're talking about, the standard is high enough, and we're suggesting you make it even higher, that when you see good things, you'll recognize them. But what we are suggesting with looking for reasons to say no is looking for legitimate reasons. There are plenty of mistakes. I've certainly made them. I made some whoppers when I got interviewed years and years and years ago that really don't necessarily uncover flaws or weaknesses that ought to concern us. Look, it's pretty simple because whomever we're going to hire, right, is going to make mistakes once they're hired. We oughtn't expect them to not make mistakes during an interview. I mean, some mistakes that people make, partially because of the Christmas rule, are completely forgivable. Now, look, guys, we still stand by our guidance. The reason to interview somebody is to find reasons to say no. So it's completely reasonable to see interviews as a crucible where we as hiring managers expect to see the very best of each candidate. We want them to perform exceptionally. And as a general rule, most managers say, I'm going to hire the person who performs most exceptionally. Unfortunately, that's also wrong because they haven't set a minimum standard. And even though the person might be best, they may not be good enough versus the job. And that's because we asked them the wrong questions, but that's another story.
Yeah. And we've done a podcast on that before, I think.
Oh, we've got a lot of podcasts, of course, about hiring and the Effective Interviewer Conference, available throughout the country and overseas, as well as on video, and our interview creation tool, which is available for licensees, are both ways to get really good, really fast at this sort of stuff. And look, we want to hear about people's best accomplishments, not their worst, right? We want to hear them communicating at their best. We want to see their very best interpersonal skills. And interviewing is an artificial reality designed to keep people out, but they know they're going to try to be their best and slip through the loophole of, well, okay, we decided to hire you after all because you really impressed us. And look, all things being equal, and of course they never are, we do want to hire the candidate who is the best for us, provided they meet the minimum standard that we have set, as high as it is for the job. The problem is that having done this, having taught this in hundreds of organizations over the last 25 years, managers mistakenly believe that looking for a no and looking for best means they have to be perfect. And it doesn't have to mean that. And it doesn't have to mean that one mistake rules candidates out. So let me use some examples. There's a difference between, say, forgetting the third part of a lengthy behavioral interview answer and saying, I haven't done that. I mean, it's almost not okay to say I haven't done that if, in fact, the manager, the people who are interviewing, know that the skill you're asking for is a critical one. And since we don't have enough time to interview people as significantly as we would like, every question we ask has a great deal of importance. So if a candidate doesn't have skill in a particular area that we've decided to ask questions about, holy Toledo, we've got a significant problem. But if, on the other hand, Mike asks me a question and I answer it two-thirds very well, and then I say, Mike, I'm so sorry, I forgot the third part of the question. That's a mistake. It's an interviewing mistake, particularly mistakes that are made around the idea of interviewing, not what somebody has done or how well they've done it, but whether or not to close at a certain time or whether it's time to ask questions is not the end of the world and is a forgivable mistake. There's a difference between mixing up a timeline in an interview answer, putting things perhaps out of order, which makes it hard for the recruiter, and having a 30-second answer to tell me about yourself with no ability to go into any more detail. You know, if somebody gets your name wrong, I mean, people call me Mike all the time. Mike, I assume people call you Mark.
All the time. Unlike you, though, I take it as a compliment.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, that, I got no quick good response for that. You are too kind to me, partner. If somebody gets your name wrong, if they call you the wrong name, it's okay. And there's a difference, though, between that, them getting your name wrong, and every interviewer that you have interviewing a candidate saying, yeah, he kept saying my name wrong. Okay. Now, you might choose to overlook that, but I would doubt it. But one person or two people's names getting a little bit wrong in the heat of the moment and then recognizing their error and apologizing for it and getting it right for the rest of the interview, there's a difference. There's a difference between a candidate who spends an entire interview calling your firm Samsung when, in fact, you're Toshiba, and the one who does it one time and then, again, self-corrects with an apology. Look, here's a specific example of a forgivable mistake versus an important indicator. You ask a manager whom you're interviewing to come be a manager for your firm about a time where he had to coach somebody through working well as part of a team. The answer you get from the manager is about them personally working on their relationship with another person who wasn't a teammate, maybe just a colleague. And it was a good answer, a solid one, appropriate efforts, appropriate effects, and so on. At the end of the answer, you say to the candidate, hey, thanks, but you know, I was really looking for more for your ability to help somebody integrate with that with an entire team, because you're going to have to do that with your team, because your team that you might be taking over here is fairly fractious. And the candidate blushes, you know, she's embarrassed a little bit and admits to being a little bit chagrined and launches into a great answer to your original question. In my opinion, this is a forgivable mistake. Okay. Manager Tools recommends you write off that first answer. I wouldn't write it off completely. It was a good answer. You learned something. You write off that first answer not as a bad answer to the question you ask, but as a mistake made in the heat of the moment. And look, guys, keep in mind, when you're being the interviewer, it plays to your strengths. It helps you when you think for a moment that you control the interview. You have the power in the interview. The candidate does not, at least until the moment you give an offer. And of course, the definition of offer is when control passes from you, the company, the hiring company, to the candidate. But Horstman's Christmas rule applies to interviewing. It's one of the reasons why our interviewing series, which I think now, Mike, is about 65 different podcasts about how to be interviewed, is such a popular product. Because Horstman's Christmas rule says most people in, we'll say, first world countries that celebrate the Christmas season, the holiday season, would say, yes, that season is important to me. I do a lot of extra things. It's time to be close to family and to celebrate and so on. And they also say, when the last party is over, when we clean up after Christmas, I'm wiped out and I need 2 or 3 days off. And that's because Christmas, like so many other things, and the classic example in the professional world is interviewing, is something that's both A, important to you, and B, you do rarely. And when you do something rarely, you don't improve by leaps and bounds. It is things that you work at, that you put your shoulder to, that you put your nose to the grindstone, that you tough it out, you practice and practice and practice and practice and practice, that you get really good, that you achieve that extra level beyond the point of diminishing returns. If you don't do something very often, you're not going to achieve greatness just naturally. You might be better than a lot of other people because you have good communication skills when it comes to interviewing. But interviews for candidates are like Christmas. And expecting people to go through Christmas, go through a season that's rare and that's important to them, and they can be magically great at it, is a mistake. It's an unfair expectation on the part of interviewees. So having a little bit of forgiveness and a little bit of understanding and recognizing that people aren't perfect is a better way to be.
I like the point you made about the manager, the interviewer, being in charge of the interview. And part of that is creating a tone or an environment in which you can get an accurate assessment of the candidate, and creating an environment where it's just completely artificial and the stress is completely artificial. I mean, you can make anybody fail, right? If you want to, you can make anybody fail, right?
Yeah, particularly when you make the interview secretive in some way, and it's an entirely kind of gotcha thing. And, you know, 5-10 years ago, those of you who have been around a few years in the professional world know that for a long time, there were stories, there still are, but they're a lot less common than they were 5-10 years ago, of companies, famous companies. Google was well known for it. I think Microsoft was as well. Consulting firms often were, where they would ask really unusual questions just to see how you could think.
Yeah, something about being the size of a nickel and being in a blender or something.
Yeah, exactly. And the idea that you should be able to figure it out, but it gave the interviewer a sense of power. When you think about people with power, one of the first things you evaluate a person on when it comes to their power is how humble they are in using their power. So, yeah, we're in control of the interview, but the candidate whom we're interviewing, who's likely to come to work for us or at our level, we're probably not going to interview somebody that's going to come in 3 levels above us in the organization, they're evaluating how you handle your power. And what would you do in real life if one of your directs made a mistake, a forgivable mistake?
And asked forgiveness, right? And said, oh, I'm sorry, right?
Yeah.
You'd forgive them. And you wouldn't just forgive them in your head. You'd tell them, right? You'd actually say it.
We'll talk about this some more in a minute, but we've taught people for years when it comes to being interviewed, it's okay to make mistakes, okay? Part of the reason we teach that is because the real danger of making a mistake as an interviewee is that you make the mistake and then you beat yourself up because you mistakenly believe the company expects you to be perfect, when in fact most companies don't. You believe they expect you to be perfect simply because we all have our own insecurities and are certain there's somebody else interviewing for this job who's better than us. So we're expecting them to expect us to be perfect. We make a mistake and then we beat ourselves up about it mentally. While we have that soundtrack in our head of, I stink, they're going to hate me, somebody else is going to get through this without making a mistake, we then don't hear the next question. And it's the second mistake we make while beating ourselves up, taking our focus off of the prize, if you will, in an interview, is what kills us in interviewing. And of course, then we feel that we made a second mistake, and then it's a vicious spiral. So when a candidate stumbles over a word, when they get part of an answer wrong, when they mix up companies, when they say something dumb that you know they meant X and they say the opposite of X, and then they're afraid. They don't know whether or not they should just say, because they're nervous, whether or not they should just say, I think I said that wrong. I'm sorry. Some are comfortable saying that. Some are not. Some want to stand by their answer, even though there's a part of them that knows it's wrong. Don't be afraid to brush it aside verbally. Say something like, hey, no problem. Or totally understand. Let it go. No big deal. Hey, I think you meant it the other way around. It happens to all of us. Let that go. All good. Or saying something like, you know, if you're Toshiba and they say Samsung, or you're Samsung and they say Toshiba, you say, you mean Samsung, right? And you smile at them, okay? You could say, just shows me you're human. Happened to me too. No worries. Now, if you don't say that, the perception will be that that is the standard you'll apply to them at work. And managers wonder why people won't try things. People won't volunteer. People won't take the next step. People won't push a little bit. People won't try something they haven't done before. And the reason why is fear of failure. Fear of power and fear of failure are two of the hugest, at times good, but mostly bad, emotional themes in the workplace. And it starts when we interview. We make them think they need to be perfect, so they avoid saying anything that might be wrong. They end up getting the job, and you've essentially said, your goal is to be perfect. Don't let me catch you not being perfect.
Right. We've talked about eustress and distress before, right? And just like distress is not terribly helpful in the work environment, eustress is, but distress is not. So why would we think that, you know, putting somebody in a situation of a large amount of distress in an interview would result in an effective interview, right?
Yeah, and people who are prepared are probably not in a state of distress. We get emails all the time from people who have used the interviewing series who say, you know, the difference was, I don't know if I've got the job, but I know I did my best. And the big reason was I knew I was prepared and I went in there relaxed. And therefore, I believed I was more able to handle a couple of the curveballs. If I'm not prepared, I'm tensed up, I can't handle the curveball. I can't hit the curve. And look, you said it, you stress and distress. Some stress, a little bit of stress is good. It gets us excited. It narrows our focus. It increases our heart rate. We get better breathing. But then some situations take it past eustress into distress. Now, even though each candidate's line between eustress and distress is different, for most candidates, interviews are distress events, unless you're prepared. Candidates understand they're supposed to be their best, yet they know they're flawed like the rest of us. Mistakes are more likely to occur for most of us in interviewing situations than in day-to-day life, and yet they know they count more against them. The candidate knows it, and they're sensitive, they're aware, and they're also aware of how we respond. Our responses to mistakes candidates give us are going to give them a sense of how that we're going to manage them. If we're not going to be the boss and we're interviewing them, our response to a mistake is going to give them some sense of what the culture's like. And if every single time somebody makes a mistake, the company just scribbles and doesn't say anything and doesn't smile, doesn't acknowledge it, doesn't say, I'm sorry, you said Mike, my name's Mark. And the candidate goes, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't even realize it. You say, dude, it's no big deal. It happens all the time. And I know a lot of you wouldn't say the word dude, but you'd be surprised how powerful it is in professional situations to send a message that it doesn't have to be pure professionalism all the time. You can use relaxed language as long as you're polite about it and change the tone of what amounts to a form of feedback that you're giving to a candidate. And guys, remember, we've said it, we'll say it again. We control the interview, but the candidate controls their decision about accepting our offer. Most candidates have no problem coming to work for a high-performance culture that is also forgiving. But many candidates don't want to work for an unforgiving boss or in an unforgiving culture. So say something. They make a mistake. It's going to happen. Say something. And in fact, that first mistake they make, if they make it, say something immediately, and that just takes a little edge off of them. And now you've given them more chance to really show you how good they are. And if you get through the interview and you haven't found anything not to like, suddenly you realize, wow, this guy's really beginning to impress me. He said several things that impressed me. And it may very well be because you took the edge off and said, hey, we're not about perfection here. We want you to be great, but great and perfection are two different things.
That's right. Now, that said, in the end, we have to make a decision. We have to discriminate amongst the candidates. We have to make fine distinctions between candidate A and candidate B. And so if somebody makes a second similar error, then it's reasonable at that point to factor that into ruling them out, perhaps.
And if there are two candidates that make two patterns, two similar areas in two different areas, you could look and say, this kind of error this person made is not a big deal here. This other one, this guy made a mistake a couple of times, and that's a big area for us. And so I'm going to say no to that person. The pattern in this area concerns me. The pattern in that area doesn't. So look, suppose somebody was late meeting a deadline. You could forgive them if you were their boss, right? If they start to develop a pattern of lateness, you'd probably have to ask them to improve their performance. Same thing. You could hire somebody who's late every once in a while. You could, because everyone is late every once in a while. But you surely wouldn't hire someone who has a pattern of not being timely, not meeting deadlines. By the same token, even your best performer can and will make several or even many mistakes in a given week. They're likely to be different mistakes in different ways. But if she makes the same mistake repeatedly, it's going to affect her performance. And so the difference here is the pattern. Random mistakes are okay, but a pattern becomes a problem. And since interviews compress the time we have to evaluate a candidate, and the distress level increases the likelihood of mistakes, the key is to forgive that first mistake, giving the candidate a chance to brush it aside themselves, but to consider that second mistake that's similar, perhaps, to be indicative of a pattern. It may be a pattern you can live with. That's okay. That's your decision. There are some jobs where communication skills, you need a 10 out of 10. There are others where a 7 out of 10 is good enough. I would love to be able in my next lifetime to convince the software development community that you can't hire a genius coder who has a 3 in communication skills.
Good luck with that.
I'm sorry, there is a minimum. And unfortunately, everybody says, oh, guy, he's a genius, but he's impossible to work with. I want to get rid of the guy. Dude, you hired him. You said you didn't care about his bad communication. I didn't know they were this bad. Okay. So responding to the first human inevitable mistake with forgiveness allows us to observe the candidate's response to their own mistake. And we talk about this in our interviewing series for candidates. It's the candidate beating themselves up about that first mistake that kills interviews. They obsess, and the cycle starts downward. So, candidate makes a mistake, it's okay, forgive them. It raises the bar between eustress and distress. You get them performing at a more ideal level, and you get to see how they respond. Maybe they make the same mistake again, in which case, sorry, that's a mistake I can't tolerate at this level in a 45-minute or an hour long or an hour and a half long interview. But tolerating a mistake the first time and forgiving it and starting to look for a pattern is the way to go about it. When a candidate makes a mistake and they're going to do it at work and they self-correct, that can actually be a good sign. So mistakes are okay, guys. They're inevitable when it comes to interviewing. It's good to forgive. And if it continues to happen, consider saying no.
Excellent. All right, my friend. Thank you.
Anytime, partner.
All right. We'll see you later. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want, with easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions. It couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes
right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Managed Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.